You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Sydney Foreman. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021.
Later in the program, the Bloomington City Council Committee of the Whole will discuss a proposed ordinance that would provide protections for community members experiencing homelessness tonight at 6:30 p.m. WFHB News Director Cade Young speaks with Reverend Forrest Gilmore, Executive Director of Beacon Incorporated, about his thoughts on the proposed ordinance. More on that in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, WFHB correspondent Katherine Patterson reports on an anti-abortion bill that passed through the State House of Representatives. Multiple doctors called the bill unproven and unethical. That's coming up in the bottom half of our show. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Wednesday, February 24th. I'm Aaron Comforti. Local teachers with the Indiana State Teachers Association, the state's largest teachers union, are wearing all black today to, quote, show the darkness facing Indiana public schools. The protest is a part of a campaign by the union to raise awareness about underfunding and COVID-19 safety concerns in the state's schools. Many of the concerns arise from recent bills put forth by lawmakers in the Indiana State House that the organization says will actually reduce funding for public schools. This is what Shelby, a member of the Teachers Association, said in a video posted to social media.
This bill diverts public funds away from public schools in order to give it to private schools and charter schools. This means wealthier families get more money to send their kids to private school. This in turn takes money away from our public school children who need it most.
Ben Yoder, an orchestra director with Hamilton Southeastern Schools, put the situation this way.
They are moving legislation through that would undermine teachers' ability to organize and undermine our ability to create positive learning environments for our students. And Governor Holcomb is refusing to prioritize teachers for the COVID-19 vaccine while simultaneously asking us to reopen schools to in-person instruction.
Keeping in step with national Republican education policies and trends, the Indiana State Legislature, held by a Republican supermajority, is supporting a funding shift to charter schools and away from traditional public schools. Charter school proponents say that the schools bring innovation and more school choice and freedom. Critics of charter schools say that the funding shift is an attempt to privatize public education and can even lead to discriminatory practices. Shelley Yoder, a state senator from Monroe County, wrote in a tweet last week, "Today, the Senate pushed forward legislation to give more money to charter schools. My legislation would have barred charter schools from receiving public tax dollars if they discriminate against students. It never even received a committee hearing." That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources reminds the public of thinning ice as temperatures warm. In a press release, DNR states, quote, "No ice is safe ice," end quote. Bloomington and nearby residents enjoy the frozen surfaces of Lake Griffey and Lake Monroe each winter. However, many people also fall through the ice. In the release, a DNR officer stated, quote, "Just like relearning how to drive on snow versus clear roads, some Hoosiers need to relearn how to safely have fun on ice," end quote. Ice thickness should always be tested with an ice auger and never alone. If you are unsure of the thickness, do not attempt to walk on the ice. The DNR suggests patrons wear a life jacket or flotation coat to keep their heads above water if the ice were to give out. Bodies of water can freeze and thaw inconsistently, so while bodies of water can look frozen solid, they may not be, putting your safety at risk.
Monroe County Community School Board heard an overview about the STEM to THEM mobile lab during their February 23rd meeting. Assistant Superintendent Dr. Mark A. Winston said the mobile lab classroom was the result of a $1.2 million grant from Regional Opportunities Initiative.
STEM to THEM really represents our effort about equity in action.
We recognize that in order for every student in MCCSE, part of the vision was that every student, no matter which school, no matter which zip code, they would have access and opportunity to have really high quality STEAM-related learning experiences. And so our focus was, let's take the STEAM experiences to every student wherever they are. And so that's how, we, just in casual conversation, the name STEM to them was coined.
Winston stated the mobile lab includes curriculum for computer science, robotics making, and engineering. Director of Elementary Education, Dr. Deborah Prinkert, stated the bus includes multiple workstations, device charging stations, dry erase board cabinets, and wheelchair accessibility. Board member April Hennessy questioned Prinkert about the bus's travel agenda.
I just wonder, is there a plan for how it will sort of circulate or be used in the district?
Yeah, I can answer that question. So we are so excited. We've already scheduled some bus tours. So it's already making its way starting this Thursday to our elementary schools. Our hope is to get it to every elementary around spring break at least one time, so students can see it. They've heard about it. They're excited about it. Our Maker Challenge winners from our fourth grade Maker Challenge, we're going to actually let them go on the bus. Obviously, we can't have too many people on there one at a time right now with social distancing and cleaning protocol, but we are going to let them actually get to go on to see it. But then next year, our hope is that we would do the computer science and coding curriculum in the fall and then visit every school again second semester, where we would do the engineering design process and the Maker curriculum.
The next school board meeting will be held on March 23rd.
The Bloomington Board of Park Commissioners approved the sale of alcohol during community events at Switchyard Park. Facility coordinator Bill Ream spoke about sale regulations during their February 23rd meeting.
The staff will utilize local vendors to provide the alcohol and will work with the vendors to secure a bar area where individuals 21 and over will be able to purchase and consume alcohol within a designated area at various department-run events at the park. The department would like to offer alcohol sales at specific events managed by the department and taking place in that park. We'll work with, as I said, we'll work with local vendors for the sale of alcohol. These vendors will be responsible for following all of our internal requirements for an alcohol permit. In addition, they have to sign a concessions agreement, department's concessions agreement, in which they give us 10% of their gross sales of the night. And they also have to get their state board of alcohol, or sorry, state of Indiana Alcohol and Tobacco Commission alcohol permit. And they do that for each event. And the vendor is required to do that and then provide us a copy of that.
Ream stated alcohol would be sold at public events such as the Performing Arts Series, concerts, and movies. He stated both the Parks Department and the vendor would contribute to fence off the bar area. Commissioner Jim Whitlatch questioned Ream about security practices.
Who's responsible if somebody gets too intoxicated and deciding they don't get served anymore? We certainly don't want somebody to drive away and have an accident. I'm not against it at all. In fact, I'm in favor of it. It makes for a nice event. I just want to make sure that the ball doesn't get dropped between us and the vendors and everybody else. And then I guess the question that goes along with that, do we have what kind of insurance do we have that will cover this type of event? Do we have insurance to cover that?
I will start, and then I'm sure Paula can answer more. As far as the vendor is responsible for checking IDs, for keeping being aware of the amount of alcohol being served and all that. As a staff, we will watch that as well.
Director Becky Higgins stated all state regulations would be followed and security would be required for any vendor serving alcohol. She said only beer and wine would be served during park events. Also during the Board of Park Commissioners meeting, board members approved a partnership agreement with El Mercado. Banneker Community Center Program Specialist Corey Hawkins spoke about the agreement.
I'm here seeking approval of a partnership agreement with El Mercado in support of a monthly market to be hosted at Banneker Community Center, highlighting Black, Indigenous, persons of color, artisans, and small business owners. In November 2019, the Bloomington Parks Foundation received close to $200,000 grant from Regional Opportunities Initiatives to create a community cultural hub at the Banneker Community Center to foster and celebrate diversity and inclusion within Bloomington and Monroe County.
Hawkins stated the market would be located in the Banneker Gym.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, WFHB correspondent Catherine Patterson reports on an anti-abortion bill that recently passed through the Indiana House of Representatives. We turn to Catherine Patterson for more on the story.
A new anti-abortion bill passed through the House this Monday that some doctors say is unethical and unproven. The bill bans certain types of chemical abortions, makes it more difficult for minors to get an abortion, and requires doctors to tell patients seeking medical abortions that if they don't want to end up going through with the abortion, that they may not take the second pill and still have the child. Although the bill passed 67-29, multiple doctors spoke out against it last week, saying the bill itself would be dangerous for women in Indiana. Dr. Tracy Wilkinson was among those doctors. She said, quote, "The state legislature should not mandate a physician to tell a patient these falsehoods that could ultimately endanger their patients' lives," end quote. Those in favor of the bill say that it is more important for women to know their options before making such a big decision. Dr. Christina Francis says that women, quote, "should not have to go home and Google whether or not there is anything they can do to save their child," end quote. Another concern with the bill is that there are grounds to sue. Advocacy and Public Policy Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, Katie Blair, says that the ACLU has been looking very carefully at this bill, and it is completely unconstitutional.
It would force health providers to lie to their patients and provide dangerous, false, and misleading information on abortion reversal that's putting patients at risk while ignoring science and the First Amendment rights of medical providers.
According to a study conducted by the University of California, 10% of women changed their minds about medical abortion. However, Blair says that the claim written in the bill is not the proper way to go. A study involving the reverse abortion plan was cut short due to dangerous complications, according to doctors protesting the bill on Monday.
No one benefits from when our health providers are forced to lie to us. It's outrageous and very dangerous. Was opposed by many medical organizations and is not, you know, abortion reversal is not anything that's supported by any, you know, serious real health organization.
The bill is now being moved on to the Senate. However, Blair encourages any Hoosier who disagrees with the bill to contact their local senator to address their concerns. For WFHB, I'm Catherine Patterson.
Up next, WFHB News Director Cade Young reports on a new city council ordinance that would issue protections for people experiencing homelessness. Young speaks with Reverend Forrest Gilmore, Executive Director of Beacon Inc., in today's feature report.
At 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the Bloomington City Council Committee of the Whole will discuss Ordinance 2106, which would add protections for community members experiencing homelessness. Highlights of the bill include at least a 15-day notice and sufficient housing requirements before the city can evict a person living in a camp. The new bill comes after the Office of the Mayor issued two evictions to people experiencing homelessness at Seminary Square Park. Forrest Gilmore, Executive Director of Beacon Inc., talked to WFHB in a phone interview earlier today regarding his thoughts on the proposed ordinance. But first, he described what service Beacon Inc. provides to the community. Here is an excerpt from our interview. Forrest Gilmore, Executive Director of Beacon Inc., welcome to the WFHB Local News.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So for starters, would you just talk about what Beacon Inc. does and what role you play in our community?
Sure. We're a housing and service provider for people experiencing extreme poverty. We provide everything from the most basic of emergency resources all the way up to housing and employment support to help people get back on their feet.
Now, I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into this proposed ordinance that deals with some of the work you're involved in. So the Bloomington City Council Committee of the Whole will discuss Ordinance 2106, which includes protections for community members experiencing homelessness, tonight at 6:30 p.m. Now, what are your overall thoughts on this piece of legislation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's heading in the right direction. The core of it is honoring people's, the core of it is decriminalizing sleeping. We currently criminalize sleeping in our community and basically make it illegal to sleep outside or to sleep, especially, and, you know, for people who have no alternatives, that's where do they go? What resources can they use if they don't have access to a home like most of us do, and they can't access public space? Where literally do people go? We've made it illegal for them to exist. So this this ordinance is attempting to correct that. And honestly, the courts right now have supported this kind of ordinance. If anything, this ordinance is a little conservative for my taste, because it strongly limits where people can sleep. But that's a compromise position, I think, to hopefully get it passed and get it through. And the courts have said that to criminalize sleeping is actually a violation of the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. This is recently in a Ninth Circuit court decision, which the Supreme Court let stand. So so very recent court decisions show that that this right is very real, and that it's very important for cities to live up to that constitutional right.
Council members Matt Flaherty, Kate Rosenbarger, and Isabel Piedmont-Smith sponsored the bill. Ordinance 2106 would amend the Bloomington Municipal Code to add a new Chapter 2.87, entitled Protections for People Experiencing Homelessness. The proposed bill is modeled after a similar ordinance in Indianapolis, adopted in 2016. The ordinance faces some opposition. The Bloomington Chamber of Commerce announced in a press release on Tuesday that it opposes the bill. Aaron Predmore, the Chamber's president and CEO, said in the release, quote, "Over the past year, we've heard increasing complaints and deep concerns voiced by members of the business community regarding encampments at Seminary Park and elsewhere. We must find an alternative way to support the needs of houseless residents that does not negatively impact local businesses, the jobs they provide, and the broader community," end quote. Other opponents have said they would rather see legislation that tries to tackle long-term homelessness solutions. However, proponents of the bill argue that it does contain long-term proposals. The ordinance says if there is insufficient housing to meet the needs of all members living in a camp, the city must wait until there is sufficient housing available prior to closing the camp. It defines sufficient housing as permanent or transitional housing, which would not include emergency shelters. In our interview, Gilmore discusses this idea and addresses the opposition this bill faces from the Chamber of Commerce. Now, moving on, the ordinance would require that sufficient housing is available, meaning permanent or transitional housing, before issuing an eviction. But this does not include emergency shelters as sufficient housing. You operate an emergency shelter yourself. How do you view this?
I think it's really important for us as a community to recognize that the affordable housing situation, especially for people in extreme poverty, is our fault as a community and our responsibility to resolve as a community. One of the thing I like about this is that it doesn't let us off the hook. Instead of trying to punish poor people for showing up in places that we quote unquote don't want them to be in, it forces us to say, if in fact we would like to not see people sleeping in the parks or sleeping in public spaces, that we deal with that with real solutions for people, that we deal with it with housing, that we deal with it with helping people get home.
Building off of that point, people have come out in opposition to the bill. For instance, the Bloomington Chamber of Commerce announced that it does not support the ordinance after sending out a survey to chamber members. What do you make of this opposition?
Well, I'm clearly disappointed that the chamber would actively advocate for the criminalization of sleeping, and push for the ongoing violation of people's civil rights and human rights. So I'm deeply disappointed in their decision. I'm not sure they fully understand what they're arguing for and realize fully what their position means. So my hope is that with future dialogue, some people can better understand this ordinance.
Gilmore offered his input on what he would like to see city officials do when it comes to addressing homelessness. And he adds his final thoughts before the council discusses the ordinance.
Well, I mean, the core of it, of course, is we don't want to see anyone arrested for sleeping. This is, we saw how horrible that was in December and then horrible again in January. It's really incredibly cruel practice that our city is engaging in order to deal with the most vulnerable people we can imagine sleeping within our view. So that's core for me. That's number one, is that we stop criminalizing sleeping. The second, of course, is the far perhaps more important direction, is that we work towards real solutions, which, you know, again, for many folks, I mean, there's a diversity of approaches to people experiencing homelessness and the needs they have. Some suffer from really severe disabilities and need a lot of support and care. Some just need an extra boost, you know, to help them get back on. But all of them are dealing with an environment that is incredibly difficult and punitive towards people who are poor, making their lives that much harder. So I think it's really important that we do whatever we can to make the experience of poverty less burdensome and provide more support to help people get back on their feet in whatever way works and is most appropriate for them.
Well, thank you for breaking that down for me, Forrest. Now, before we part ways, is there anything else you would like to add?
So very similar, actually far more open, if you will, ordinance was passed in Indianapolis a few years ago, very similar to this one. This one is actually more restrictive than the one in Indy that was passed in Indy. And every single Democrat and several Republicans voted for that bill. I believe that bill emerged under the threat from a lawsuit related to the court decisions about rights to public space and people's also rights to their belongings, which is also in this ordinance. And so I think it's really important that people recognize that I don't want to say this in a way that implies a threat as much as to say that this is where it's going inevitably if we don't respond proactively. It's going to inevitably lead to this being addressed in the courts. And I really, as a community, I wish we wouldn't go there. I wish we would be proactive and address it in this way rather than eventually leading to a court situation to resolve the issue.
All right. Well, Reverend Forrest Gilmore, Executive Director of Beacon, Inc., thank you so much for coming on to the WFHB Local News.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
For WFHB News, I'm Cade Young. Now it's time for Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted by Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Here on Better Beware, we try to give you a heads up on various scams that are running around and some advice on how not to fall for them. But our advice tends to get split up and handed out in whatever pieces relate to the con job du jour. So here's a list of some basic do's and don'ts that everyone needs to remember to stay safe in our modern world, starting with some things not to do. Do not answer your phone ever unless you recognize the number on your caller ID. And never call back just to find out who it was. A legitimate caller will leave a voicemail. If there's no voicemail, forget about it. In fact, if I don't know the number and there's no voicemail, I block that caller. Sometimes crooks do leave a voicemail, though, so remember, do not give out your personal information to anyone who calls you. No matter what they say, no matter who they say they are, if you think the call might be legitimate, hang up and you call them using a number you found, a number that's publicly listed. Do not respond at all to any sudden demand for money that hits you from out of the blue. If you ever actually do owe money to the government for taxes or fines or anything, or if you really do owe money to some company, they will always, always send you something in the U.S. mail first. If somebody wants money and you haven't gotten anything in the mail, it's a scam every time. And do not believe your friend or family member is in trouble if somebody says they are. Scammers get around the nothing-in-the-mail tip-off by inventing a sudden emergency. They claim somebody you know and love has been arrested or injured or kidnapped. If you get that kind of message from anyone you don't know personally, no matter who they claim to be, hang up and check it out. First, call the alleged victim. If you can't get hold of them, call the authorities or the hospital or whoever is supposed to be involved using a public number you looked up. Never use a number the caller gives you. Do not send money by wire transfer or prepaid money card to anyone you don't know personally. It's really best never to use those methods at all. They're fast and convenient, but they're also untraceable and irrevocable and the hands-down favorites for fraudsters. If you're going to pay some money to someone for something, write a check or use a credit card, not a debit card. Well, what do you know? We're almost out of time and I haven't even gotten to the do's. Keep listening and we'll continue this list in the future. Meanwhile, make good choices and stay safe. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our features were produced by Katherine Patterson and Kate Young.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our engineer and executive producer is Kate Young. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
The WFHB Local News is available as a podcast. Search our call letters, WFHB, wherever you find your podcast and never miss a show again.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate.
You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,